Warning: The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. It's Rock and Roll Friday. Everything is breaking in the studio today. Phones are ringing at the wrong time. Fax machines are breaking. Email system went down. It's great to be in radio. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. MichaelSavage.com is the website that has all of these stories, including Obama's thin skin. The first time a press person, used to be known as reporters, then journalists, the first time a press person asked him a real question, he got very angry, stared at him as if to say, how dare you ask me a question? I'm not used to it. I'm from Chicago. I'm used to being worshipped. Now, the question the reporter was trying to ask was about the fact that Obama appointed a lobbyist, William J. Lynn, to become defense secretary. And they said, how does that jive with your openness? Obama grabbed the reporter by the shoulder and held him and stared in his eyes. I guess he figured his charisma would overcome his skepticism. Also, the Gitmo blowback. Did you liberal psychos from hell who don't understand anything about reality know that a Saudi terrorist who has been released from Guantanamo in the past has now become a top member of Al-Qaeda? Let's hope he doesn't visit your neighborhood with a Middle East cocktail. Also, the Reich stuff. Why has the racist liberal media refused to report the hateful words of Obama's male construction workers anywhere in America need not apply for bailout money? Answer, because they're vermin and they hate white males. Any other questions? Because I have the answers. This is the Savage Nation. Again, the phone number is Michael Savage. What? No, that's not the phone number, whatever it is. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. There is one British writer who understands Obama, only one. He calls himself a polemical commentator. And being that I'm a polemical commentator, I related to Gerald Warner's article on Barack Obama inauguration, This Emperor Has No Clothes, It Will All End in Tears. It's fabulous. It's on the bottom of MichaelSavage.com for those of you who don't want to go to the original source. I'm going to paraphrase and read parts of it for you. From the polemical commentator Gerald Warner in England, he says, the emperor has no clothes. It will all end in tears. He says, the Obama hysteria is not merely embarrassing to witness. It is itself contributory to the scale of the disaster that is coming. We are experiencing in the deepening days of a global depression. What we are experiencing is the desperate suspension of disbelief by people of intelligence in a pathetic effort to hypnotize themselves into the delusion that it will be all right on the night. It will not be all right. He says, we have been here before. In the spring of 1997, when a charismatic young prime minister entered Downing Street, cheered by children bussed in for the occasion, waving plastic union jacks, a very few of us at that time incurred searing reproaches for denouncing the great charlatan, as I have always denominated Tony Blair, and dissenting from the public hysteria. Notice the word dissent. He knows what the word means. That's why I called myself yesterday Dr. Dissent, because I know what it means. I am the only dissenter in the American media right now, but I will not be the last. I am perhaps the first, but as usual, I will not be the last. I am telling you what we're in for. He said very few people denounced the great charlatan at that time. Then he says three times a deluded Britain elected that transparent fraud. And he goes on and he says, the burnt child, contrary to conventional wisdom, does not fear the fire. After the Blair experience, there is no excuse for anybody in Britain falling for Obama. Yet today in this country, even some of those who remain sane during the emotional spasm of the Diana aberration are pumping the air for Princess Barack. Princess Barack, I wonder what he means by that. At a time of gross economic and geopolitical instability throughout the Western world, this is beyond irresponsibility. To anyone who kept his head, the string of Christmas cracker mottos booming through the public address system on Washington's National Mall can only excite skepticism. It is crucial to recall the reality that lies behind the rhetoric. Denouncing, quote, those who seek to advance their aims by inducing terror and slaughtering innocents, close quote, comes ill from a man whose flagship legislation, the Freedom of Choice Act, will impose abortion, including partial birth abortion, on every state in the Union. It seems the era of hope is to be inaugurated with the slaughter of the innocents. Obama's America Recovery and Reinvestment Plan is like one of those toxic packages traded by bankers. It camouflages many unaffordable gifts to his client state. With a federal deficit already at $1.2 trillion, Obama wants to squander $825 billion, okay, on creating 600,000 more government jobs and a further 459,000 in green energy, useless wind turbines, and other Heath Robinson contraptions favored by Beltway environmentalists. It is frightening to think there is a real possibility that the entire world economy could go into complete meltdown and famine kill millions, yet Western and British commentators are cocooned in a warm comfort zone of infatuation with America's answer to Neil Kinnock. We should be long past applauding politicians of any hue. You hear this? We should be long past applauding politicians of any hue. They got us into this mess. The best deserve a probationary opportunity to prove themselves. The worst should be in jail. It is questionable whether the present political system can survive the coming crisis. Whatever the solution, teenage swooning sentimentally over a celebrity cult has no part in it. The most powerful nation on earth is confronting its worst economic crisis under the leadership of its most extremely liberal politician who has virtually no experience of federal politics. This is not an opportunity, but a catastrophe. These are frank, even ungracious words. They have the one merit that, unlike almost everything else written today about Obama, they will not require to be eaten in the future. That's from Gerald Warner. This emperor has no clothes. It will all end in tears. It's up on michaelsavage.com. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. michaelsavage.com is the website. And from yesterday, I think it is worthy and very important that we play the racist comments of Robert Reich, the distorted little man who was an economic advisor to Obama, who has been living beneath the floorboards of the political system for these many years that Bush was in power, and of course crawled out like a cockroach from the wet floorboards to say the following yesterday. Listen.
I am concerned, as I'm sure many of you are, that these jobs not simply go to high-skilled people who are already professionals or to white male construction workers.
Now, why is it that I'm the only radio show in America playing this, showing you the racist nature of white liberals who are part and parcel of the Obama machine? Why is it that I'm the only one doing this? Did you hear it anywhere else before I played it? I doubt it. But the bigger issue is the bigger issue, and the bigger issue is the bigger issue. The bigger issue is Bye Bye Love, which I like to hear on the way out the door in this opening on the Savage Nation. This is the Savage Nation. It is Friday. It is Open Mic to Mike Friday. You can call on The Hatred for White Males by Robert Reich, The Total Inexperience of Barack Hussein Obama, The Worship of the Hypnotized in the American Middle Stream Media, The Christmas Cracker Mottos that Obama tried to pass off as a speech. Didn't I tell you it was a nothing speech? Okay, stop for a minute. Stop for a minute. Ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. Everyone knows it's JFK. We have nothing to fear but fear itself, FDR. Can you say one thing? Can you remember one thing that B.O. has said? I'll be right back.
Savage.
Well, she's the gal in the red blue jeans. She's the queen.
for all the tea. She's the woman that I know. She's the woman that loves me so. Say
Bebopalula by Gene Vincent on A Savage Nation, where America still lives. We have not gone over the cliff with the Obama worshippers. The Christmas cracker mottos do not resonate with the Savage Nation. We have not suspended our disbelief of this fraud. We have no faith in politicians at all, particularly an extremely liberal politician who has no experience in federal politics. Yes, it is the Savage Nation. And you'll know that I'll be right. It's only a matter of time until you agree with me. Those of you who are most angry with me right now will agree with me the most eventually. That's the way it always is. Those of us who are slightly ahead of our time are always castigated by those of you who are always behind the times in understanding what's really going on. I mean, you're deluded. You elected an imposter. You elected an imposter named Obama. It is incomprehensible that you could elect a fraud like this. The man is going to spend $1 trillion to create government jobs. What are these jobs going to consist of? Have you encountered a government worker recently? Do you realize how incompetent, how officious they are, how dangerous it is to create more government jobs rather than fewer? You know what green energy is? Green energy is nothing. Green energy is fraudulent. I mean, we all want a clean environment, but you don't squander money in creating fake jobs in fake energy jobs. No, but as I say, many of you think that another kind of a politician will save you. What you don't understand, it's the political structure that got you into the mess we're in, got us into the mess we're in. It's the political structure, the corrupt Democrat-Republican machine that got us into this mess. The worst should be in prison. The worst of them should be in prison. The best should only be given a probationary opportunity, as Gerald Warner says, to prove themselves. But you want to worship Obama. Go ahead. You can worship him. Anyone calling from Los Angeles today who gets on this show on KGIL, 1260 on the dial, gets a free copy of Psychological Nudity. I'm sorry I can't give it out to everyone on the show today, but I want to get my Los Angeles audience back up to speed because I want to, so that when I go to Los Angeles, I can listen to myself in the car when I'm not on the air and listening to a replay. Oh, I got to do a tour. I don't do a tour. I'm never seen anywhere. It's not because I have Tourette's syndrome or anything. I just don't like the tour. I don't like hotels. I don't like airplanes. Did you see what happened on the airplane? Why I don't like airplanes? Do you understand this, sir? Do you have any idea why I don't like airplanes? I want you to join me now. I want you to follow the bouncing ball and go to michaelsavage.com. I saw a story that got me scared, that should get you scared, get you sick. But it tells you why it's dangerous to fly. It's from the LA Times this morning. My headline is different than the ones they put on the article. The headline is, raise your voice, go to jail, lose your kids. I don't think you know about this story. But here is a woman, ordinary middle-aged woman, had two children. They were acting out on the airplane. So she spanked them. She gave them each two swats on the behind. And in doing so, she dropped a glass of alcohol on the floor, you know, drink. The male steward, the kind of low-life slug produced by San Francisco's lowest community, the male steward in San Francisco reported her as a terrorist. They arrested her under the Patriot Act. They took her children away. They put the children in foster care, all because the low-life slug from San Francisco, the male steward, said she was a terrorist. We are living in a police state. I don't think you know that at least 200 passengers have been convicted of felonies under the Patriot Act, often for behavior involving only raising their voice to one of the male stewards, the little Nazis from San Francisco, the little same-sex fascist Nazis, said she's a terrorist. They took her children away. Now, do you think airlines are misusing the law? Well, we know they are. But then again, these are bully boys who have no real power in their lives except when they don the flying uniform. The minute they don the flying uniform, I guess they think they're in a movie from the 1950s about the Nazis versus the Americans, and they're playing the former, not the latter. 1-800-449-8255. Little-known congresswoman picked to replace Hillary. I'm all for it. Governor Patterson, good job. He defied the liberal wing of the Demon Cat Party. He chose an upstate New York woman who's backed by the NRA. In other words, she's sort of a, the minute I saw it, I said she's a Sarah Palin-esque, politically Sarah Palin-esque. She's a conservative Democrat, and the libs went crazy. Good job, Governor Patterson, for daring to defy the ultra-left wing of the Democrat Party. Good for you. Good for you. They're the ones who are partially blind, not you. You see the bigger picture. Raise your voice, go to jail, lose your kids. Let alone Congresswoman pick to replace Hillary. The king has no clothes. 1-800-449-8255. Robert Reich. Robert Reich. Any other topic is fair game. Chicago. Dennis, you're up on the Savage Nation topic. Please go ahead.
Michael, yesterday you opposed Barack Obama's decision to close Gitmo. And it left me wondering, because torture and other harsh techniques that were done there are unconstitutional, like our own
country. Oh, my, oh, my. Is setting off a bomb in a city unconstitutional, sweetie?
It is a no.
Oh, darling, listen to me, sweetheart. They have no constitutional rights, darling. They're not American citizens. Do you get it? Do you get it, son? Do you get it, son? They were being tried as enemy combatants. Do you know who defined that originally, enemy combatant? The concept of an enemy combatant? Do you know who defined that?
I don't know. Who defined it?
It was Franklin Delano Roosevelt, Socialist Democrat, 1944. He used that designation, his Justice Department did, to try Nazis who were dropped on Long Island by German submarines. He tried them not as American citizens, not in courts of law, but as enemy combatants, and they were tried and found guilty and shot. Are you aware of that, Democrat, Socialist, FDR did that, Dennis? The problem is you're not educated. The problem is the media is filled with sycophants who don't even know their own history. That's why we're in trouble. That's why we have the charlatan as president and idiots like you calling the show, talking about constitutional rights for Osama bin Laden.
Savage. Giddy up, giddy up, ding dong, giddy up, giddy up, ding dong, giddy up, giddy up, ding dong, giddy up, giddy up, giddy up. We rode and we rode the whole night through. The horse was tired and I was too. I had a date with my gal at 8. Come on, ding dong, we can't be late.
Oh, I don't know. Is this a dirty song or what? You know, I look back on some of these 50 songs and the lyrics. I was naive. Giddy Up Ding Dong by Freddie Bell. I think I'll just leave it at that. I mean, you know, Bebop-a-Lula, I understand. But Giddy Up Ding Dong, I mean, I'll leave that one alone. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. How about School Days by Chuck Berry? Do we have that on Rock and Roll Friday?
School? And out to school.
Oh, yeah. Geometry. Trigonometry. Astronomy.
American history
and blueberry pie.
You study them hard, hoping to pass. Working your fingers right down to the bone. The guy behind you won't leave you alone.
Holy, you know, even this. Listen, you're working so hard to pass. Not today. Not in the new education system we have under the Obama administration. Of course, it started long before him. But he's going to make it worse, not better. The kids don't have to work to pass. The teachers are the ones who are under the gun right now, not the students. Every student's a victim. Every student has an excuse for not being able to keep up with the class. Class is too fast. The class is too slow. The class is too white. The class is too bright. The class is too left. The class is too right. Los Angeles, KGIL. Brad, you're on the Savage Nation.
Michael, you forgot My Ding-a-Ling by Chuck Berry, too. But anyway,
oh, please, stop. No, let's let that go.
Last 2 years, I've been listening to Obama talk about pulling the troops out of Iraq to send them into Pakistan. Today, he launches missiles. Sure, he probably killed some terrorists. Good for him. But I know he probably killed some civilians, too. Isn't that 10 times worse than that last caller was whining about with rights in Gitmo? Where's Code Pink? Where are all these...
I don't know. Oh, the Code Stinkers are in pig heaven right now. Code Stinko is in pig heaven. They were sitting right up front at the inauguration.
What, how do they not see this? How do they not see...
How do they not see it? How does a Cyclops not have anything but tunnel vision is what you're asking. These people are the equivalent of the human Cyclops. They have only tunnel vision, which is to hate the establishment as long as they're not the establishment. But the minute they become the establishment, they no longer hate the establishment. That's number one. Number two, they hate the heterosexual white male always. The heterosexual white male is to be hated at all times. What do you mean, how come they don't see it? Because they're hypocrites. How? Now, you're calling from Los Angeles, KGIL, as we all know. So you're getting a free copy of Psychological Nudity. But the question is, Brad, and I have to ask it at the risk of your displeasure, how did you find the show again in Los Angeles?
I used to listen to, like, Larry Elder at this time, but he's not on the air anymore, and I started radio surfing and found you.
Well, who's better, me or Larry Elder? Take the book back. He's not getting a book. He paused. That's it. No, send him the book, but that wasn't a good answer. I'm just kidding. I'm not an Indian giver. Los Angeles. Now let's go to across the country. Now cut it. Now let's go up the coast. That's what we'll do. We'll go from south to north. You know, I haven't visited Portland and Seattle in a long time. I'm thinking of going to Seattle this weekend. I won't go, but I'm thinking of it because there's a Seattle boat show up there and there's a boat I want to look at. And the reason I won't fly is because if I raise my voice, they'll be able to put me in jail. If I accidentally use profanity, they could say I violated the Patriot Act and put me in prison. I don't like flying. I'm sorry. I'm not driving to Seattle. Private jet will cost me $10,000 to go there. I'm not going to go there. I don't believe in blowing my money like that. You know, but I'm thinking of going up there. I just love Seattle when I was there 12, 13, 14 years ago when I was doing book tours. I would do 10 city tours. Wow, are they exhausting. But I loved Seattle. I loved Portland. They were the tour was almost over at that point. I used to live in the East Coast. So I go New York, you know, then the Midwest, then you go L.A., you get a minute on a radio show. You'd realize that when I was not a radio, when I would get on a radio show for a minute, they'd fly me into a city to get a minute on a radio show, and it was considered the publicists would think they did a big deal. I give people 15 minutes, and they don't even say thank you to get on my show. They have no idea what I'm giving them with valuable time. I'm too nice. I'm too nice a guy. But the reason I love Seattle, it was usually the last stop on the book tour. And if I had finished usually 5 in the morning, it was a good morning, Seattle, blah, blah, blah. Then one radio shot. I used to love the radio stations up there. I'll never forget this. I got to tell you this because I can do whatever I want since it's my show. And I want to tell you this. When I used to do my book tours, there was a wonderful talk show host in Seattle whose name I forget. I'm sorry. And he was on one of the big stations there. And I don't think my show is on that station, so I won't mention it. I'd come and talk about herbs or nutrition. And he was a nice guy. And he said to me, boy, you're really good in radio. He said, you should consider a career in radio because you have a magnetic ability in radio. I said, come on. How am I ever going to get into radio? I don't know how to do it. He says, you should consider it. You're really good at radio. But to say to a guy you'd be a good Olympic skier, you know, when he's barely driving a sled. Well, now I'm an Olympic skier, so to speak. And I want to thank that man. I don't know who he is or what station he was really on. Those are the great days of radio. I remember I would go around the halls of that studio. That's when everyone was flush in this business. And they actually had large portraits on the walls of all of the talent that was on that radio station from morning till evening. That's when talent was king. You know what I'm saying? Morning host, whatever, John Robbins, I'm making up a name. Mid-afternoon, blah, blah, blah. That's before Boy George went into radio. That's when they had local hosts. That's before Boy George hoodwinked the public the way Barack Obama is. I mean, Boy George, affectionately the golfer, is the equivalent to Barack Obama on the other side of the aisle. He's exactly the same fraud, in my opinion. You understand this or not? So anyways, I think I'm going to Seattle to look at a boat because I heard it's sunny up there, even though it's 38 degrees and sunny. I got a beautiful mist down here in San Francisco, like a Irish mist, a soft, beautiful, springy, misty, cloudy sun in my eye. I'm not ready for Boca. I'm not ready for the dermatological. I'm not ready for the white hat and sandals. What do you want to talk about in the Savage Nation? How about some rock and roll? Before I take callers and get agitated, you know, it's Friday. In a few hours, I'm going to be off the air. Then I have a long, wonderful weekend to bang my head against the wall till Monday. This is the myth of Sisyphus. Dr. Descent is on the myth of Sisyphus here every day. Let's see, we have Baby Baby by Frankie Lyman, Peggy Sue by Buddy Holly, Tossing and Turning by Bobby Lewis, Giddy Up Ding Dong, we can't play it, it's X-rated, Rip It Up by Little Richard, Bebop, Alula, we played already, House Tossing and Turning by Bobby Lewis, let's hear that.
I couldn't sleep at all last night.
Not bad. Kill it, I don't like it, no. How about Just a Gigolo by Louis Prima? He's a
just
nut.
Just a gigolo, everywhere I go.
Oh.
The part I'm playing.
Every time I hear Louis Prima, I want to taste the pizza from the 1950s. When the mozzarella cheese smelled like vomit. I mean, that was mozzarella cheese.
There will come a day.
That's when spaghetti was, when pasta was spaghetti. Mozzarella cheese smelled like vomit. What did they do to mozzarella cheese that it lost its pungency?
Life goes on without me.
Very
and
nice.
Just a gigolo.
Why'd he die young? I don't understand. All these guys, they never lived like 57. Scares me to death. I don't like reading like lifespans of various people. I like to read the guys who lived long, but there aren't too many left. I mean, you know, 1857 to 1949. That's a nice one. Or 1908, and he's still living. I don't know what. 1908. All right, he lived to 2009. So that's a good one. I don't like reading born 1956 and he died of a heart attack yesterday or of pancreatic cancer or, God, you know, horrible. Guys are burning themselves out trying to satisfy their wives and their children, keeping up with the Joneses. This society is just so rough on people. It's murder. Better off being a, I don't know, sort of a modified hippie. You can make a good living. You don't have to have the newest toothbrush in the rack, do you? That's not bad. Las Vegas, Paul, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, Mr. Savage, I hate to inform you, but my wife tells me I no longer can listen to you because I assume because as educated as you are, you know that the sugar levels go up when you're a diabetic when you get stressed. And she says, with the traffic around here and listening to you and getting all upset with these idiot callers you got calling in, talking about the Guantanamo Bay getting...
Oh, yes, that Osama bin Laden's friend should have constitutional rights... When they don't even understand the constitutional rights do not apply to foreigners who are trying to kill you. They apply to U.S. citizens, not to people trying to take away our U.S. and our citizenship.
Yeah, they're all a bunch of friggin' idiots, but...
Thank you. Well, hold on. You mean, what? That's the one that got you upset where you almost had a diabetic, went into diabetic shock?
Yeah, that's basically how it is. My sugar levels get up to about 600 or 700 by the time I get home just because...
Wait, are you in a car right now, Paul?
Yes, sir.
All right, hold on. Play Robert Reich for him. I'm going to do it. Hold on. What's your blood sugar now? Do you have an instant meter?
Yeah, it's sitting at about 400.
All right, is it on your finger right now? Because we're going to play a soundbite for you and see where it goes. Are you ready?
Uh-oh. Okay.
No, but we got to play the game. You say your blood sugar's at 400. Now I'm going to play something for you. You got to be honest. You got to tell me where the blood sugar goes up, whether it goes up or down. Are you ready?
Okay, I'm ready.
No, is it on the finger now?
Yes, it's. I got to prick it as soon as you start doing it.
Yeah, but how do we know what the rate? Okay, the last time you did it was how long ago?
About 5 minutes ago.
All right, and it was at it 5 minutes ago, but that's already when you were angry. It was at 400.
Yeah, that's the. I jumped up to 400 because of that.
All right,
idiot.
Get ready. When I say three, we're going to fire away Robert Reich, and then you're going to prick your finger, and we're going to get a blood sugar count. And a one, and a two, and a three.
I am concerned, as I'm sure many of you are, that these jobs not simply go to high-skilled people who are already professionals or to white male construction workers.
All right. What's the reading, Paul?
Well, I'm sitting at 480 right now, and it's going to keep on climbing. That idiot, I have to give you a little sideline, is that I'm a white male construction worker.
Oh, I shouldn't have done this. Then now I apologize.
I'm going to jump over 700 or 800. She's going to kill me now.
Oh, my God. Now, how do we get it down? How do we help you get the blood sugar down? Because I don't want to have you have a problem in the car there.
Well, your music is perfect because it brings you back to the days to where...
All right, hold on. Which one of the music pieces can we use to bring down your blood sugar?
The Ding-a-ling song?
All right, hold on. First of all, we're sending you a free copy of Psychological Nudity. Already it went down to 500. Now we're going to play Giddy Up Ding Dong. It'll go back to normal. Play Giddy Up Ding Dong for Paul.
Giddy Up Ding Dong, Giddy Up. The whole night.
horse was tired and I was too. I had a date with my gal at 8. Come on, ding dong, we can't be late. Giddy up, giddy up, ding dong, giddy up, giddy up, ding dong.
Oh my God, if I don't know.
Up in the morning and out to school. The teacher is teaching the golden rule. American history and practical math. You study them hard.
Studying hard and hoping to pass.
Working
your fingers right down to the bone. The guy behind you won't leave you alone.
Ring,
ring, ring goes the bell.
The cook and the lunchroom's
ready to sell.
You're lucky if you can find the seat.
You're fortunate if you have time to eat. And here it comes.
Back in the classroom,
open your books.
Keep it, the teacher don't know,
how mean she looks.
Soon as three o'clock rolls around,
it's Savage Nation. This is Dr. Descent on Rock and Roll Friday. We are playing School Days by Chuck Berry. When the chrome was thick and the women were straight. God, I love that line. We celebrate when the chrome was thick and the women were straight. All right, turn it off already. I don't know if they like it or don't like it. What do I know? You don't know in radio. It's an invention, the whole thing in your head. Ratings come out. They say you're doing good, you survive. They say you're doing bad, they throw you out the door. The whole thing is a mystery. It's a mystery. That's actually fantastic. You sit in a radio studio, you do a show, and either they tell you you're fired or they give you a raise. You don't know why. Some numbers somewhere tell them whether you're doing good or bad. And so the whole thing is mystically impossible to comprehend. Do you understand this? How amazing this is? In other words, if you're a live performer, you go to an auditorium, and it's full, you know you did well. And accordingly, how many people are in the seats, or a politician, how many morons vote for you or don't vote for you. But in the media, there's almost no way to know. It's up to some numbers somewhere, numbers in the sky. Thus far, the system's very good. It's worked for me for 15 years. I'm sure with the new Obama administration, they'll rig the numbers so I'm no longer in business. Hey, I don't care at this point. I've had the longest possible run for a guy who's as honest as I am, you could imagine. You know, if they said to me, you're off the air tomorrow, which is not happening, by the way, but let's say they said this and that, whatever, you're out of radio. I will have had 15 of the best years of my life. March 21st, 2009 will be 15 years in radio, and I hope to be on the air for that with some kind of special show from Somewhereville. I don't know where. I'm thinking of it now, what to do for that 15th anniversary of the Savage Nation, but to me it's a victory for my own self, because I was counted out 15 years ago. I was counted out by the system. I was thrown out by affirmative action, counted out, counted down. I was down for the count. You talk about the wrestler. You talk about Rocky Balboa. Let me tell you something. In the world I was in, I was knocked out, and they were ready to count 10 and take me off the mat. But I got up at the 10 count, and here I am 15 years later, still throwing punches. And I got to tell you, somebody up there likes me or I wouldn't be here. I told you that. I prayed for God to give me this, and look what I got. Look what I got. Now, the question is whether my prayer to God will have much meaning left when we are surrounded by so many godless people running the government. Do you hear what I just said to you? We have godlessness running this government right now, and we're right on the verge of a Soviet-style government. We're this far away. America's future hangs in the balance like a loose tooth, and I don't know that this tooth can be put back into the skull. I just don't know. I have a feeling that this fraudulent emperor will be the last blow. I don't know how we can survive him. I just don't know how we can survive him, because there's no skepticism in the media. Now, it is true that there's hopeful signs, that when he stared down a reporter yesterday who dared ask him a question, they got the impression that he's not exactly what they thought he was. Then there was a little more hope when, during the second time they allegedly did the oath of office a second time with Judge Roberts. But the new government, the new secretive government under Obama, did not permit pool reporters or photographers into that ceremony. They had the audacity to provide blurry pictures by some doofus photographer that the government hired. And the Associated Press, to their credit, I was shocked, said, "We're not going to publish pictures produced by the White House. We insist you let us be there." I guess they understand what's at stake. Finally, Thank you, Associated Press. We've been trying to help you all these years. If only you understood. If only you had understood what we've been trying to tell you. Okay, but there's always hope that the press will stand up to the machine and they'll say, wait a minute, this guy may look different. This guy may sound different. This guy may be articulate where Bush was a dummy. This guy may be able to move on his feet where the other one was a flat foot. But the guy is a fraud. Not only that, he's a dangerous fraud. He's staring at us when we ask him a question. He's trying to intimidate us. He won't let us take pictures of him with a secret ceremony. You know what I'm saying? So there's hope yet. I believe the facade has cracked. I believe the veneer is cracked. I believe the stucco has broken. I believe that soon the stucco will come off the edifice and you will see the actual status of the wooden figure, the Trojan horse called Obama, very shortly. As soon as the plaster edifice is gone, we will see what the wooden Trojan horse is actually made
Savage.
Of.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Peggy Sue, oh how my heart yearns for you, oh Peggy, my Peggy Sue. Oh well, I love you, girl, yes, I love you, Peggy Sue.
This is Dr. Dissident on the Savage Nation. Peggy, we're playing Peggy Sue by Buddy Holly.
Pretty,
because
Peggy,
we worship the days when the chrome Peggy was thick.
Sue.
And the women were straight.
Oh, well, I love you, gal.
For us, there will always be tail fins.
I love you.
If you care to join in the conversation, don't even try because we're sold out. Just please take a seat in the big tent called the Savage Nation. Join the big, big tent that's getting bigger by the day and understand why. Why you know and I know being a dissenter in America is a badge of honor. Why one day you two will be proud to say, I dissent from this charlatan. I dissent from this disaster called Obama. I will not be hypnotized by the deluded fools in America. No, the coming crisis cannot be solved by swooning. The coming crisis cannot be solved by sentimental swooning. The coming crisis cannot be solved by worshiping Obama as though he is a celebrity. No. No, my friends, the politicians are the last people on earth we should be looking to save us. In fact, most of them should be in prison, and those who we have any faith in at all should be given a very, very, very probationary opportunity in which to prove themselves, but certainly they should not be worshipped. Nevertheless, the public hysteria is at an all-time high. The deluded Americans are still running around with Obama signs and impeach Bush. They still think that a politician can save them from themselves. So if you care to converse on this or any other topic, you know the number to call. And we have the Obama in the press room. Somebody asked Obama about the man he appointed to be defense secretary as being a lobbyist. And Obama gets very, very stiff and rigid and stares at the reporter. Listen to clip 7. Hello.
I'm directing Tom, Mr. Lynn.
Oh, hold on a second, guys. I came down here to visit. I didn't come down
here.
We
have very strict lobby rules, though. Mr. Lynn was the lobbyist, sir.
All right, don't worry, guys.
This is what happens. I can't end up visiting you guys and shaking hands if I'm going to get grilled every time I come down.
I guess Jonathan didn't like my answer, Mr. President.
How do you think Robert did? Did you watch his briefing?
We will be having a press conference, at which time you can feel free to answer questions. Right now, I just wanted to say hello and introduce myself to you guys. That's all I was trying to do. Like
in other words, he was trying to BS them and schmooze them, and one of them actually acted like a journalist and said, how do you reconcile hiring a lobbyist to be defense secretary? And Obama says, hey, I just came down here to BS you. How dare you ask me a question? And then he gets hokey and homey with clip five. Let's hear that one.
Have you had a workout yet, sir?
You know, I have.
Where?
It turns out I've got a little gym up here. It's on the third floor.
He works out. He's a good-looking guy. Great. I'm glad. God, worship him. The emperor has no clothes, of course, and it will all end in tears. But, God, you keep worshiping, and don't say I didn't warn you. That's all. If you'd like to comment on this, please don't bother, because I'm not going to take your call supporting Obama or attacking Obama. That's not the issue. The issue is whether or not you have the sense to understand politicians who got us in this mess and not going to get us out of it. How can you believe a political party is going to save you? Are you people that crazy? It was the Democrats and the Republicans who bankrupted America. But, okay, you still think it's a two-party system. This party's bad, that party's good. That party's good, that party's bad, you know. Obama speaks Indonesian at State Department? Oh, come on. Let me hear clip 12 and then clip 13.
But first, there was a remarkable and unusual moment today during the president's visit to the State Department. Today, someone yelled from the crowd, hello, in a foreign language. And Obama spoke back in the Indonesian language. Take a listen.
Yeah, all he said was Abakaba. That's all. I think he was ordering some dinner or something. I think I ordered Abakaba. I haven't been to a rice table restaurant in years. I went in once. It was horrible. Most of those restaurants where they made you take your shoes off, the rug stank. Who would take your shoes off in a restaurant? What an uncivilized custom. I know a lot of the white liberals thought it was civilized. Oh, you go in and you sit with your legs crossed till the circulation stops and you can wind up almost dying of that disease from long plane flights in the Indonesian restaurant. But the idea of sitting with your shoes off, your feet stink. Who wants to sit around a person with their socks looking you in the eye? What an uncivilized custom, my God. Oh, because it was a not American custom. It was automatically better than us. Get out of here, you idiots. You sit with your shoes off. Go smell someone's dirty feet. So he said, Akaba, big deal. Probably ordering something from the rice table from Indonesia. You can't make everything into something bigger than it was. He spoke a little Indonesian, big deal. She lived there, went to a madrasas and studied the Quran. So what? So what? What does it matter to you? What would it matter to you if he woke up one day and he said that the official language will be Saudi Arabian Arabian? What's the difference? It's one world. What's the difference if you wake up and he says all white male workers now have to report to re-education camps to make up for the past? So what? He means well. He's a nice guy. I mean, Robert Reich, the distorted little man, said that he doesn't want the money to go to people who are white male construction workers or professionals. So what? What's the difference? What is the difference if Larry King, the lowest of the low, a gutter rat would be something to look up to for Larry King? Did you hear Larry King, what he had the nerve to say yesterday? Do you understand how demented the media is in the form of a Larry King? Listen to clip 22.
Bob, my younger son, Cannon, he is 8. And he now says that he would like to be black. I'm not kidding. He has a lot of advantages to being black. Black is in.
Why are they laughing? Does anyone understand what this is? Now, I want to ask you folks, if you're black and your son wakes up and he says he'd like to be white, what would you say to him? Let's just put this aside. Well, let's say you're Asian. I did this yesterday. You didn't get it? You're Asian, you wake up, and your son is 8 years old. He says, Dad, I would wish I were a white man. What would you say to him? There's a lot of advantages to it. I mean, what would you say to your son? Would you say to him, I mean, this, you know, I think I'm going to have to write a book on how to raise a child. Maybe I'm, you know, as an elder, as a societal elder, I should have some knowledge. You don't have to get mad at your son if he says a thing like that. It shows that you didn't do your job. It shows you failed him as a father. But Larry King doesn't understand that he failed a child because he doesn't understand he failed as a journalist. He failed as a human being. So how could he understand he failed his child, in my opinion? So what are you going to do? I got such horrible calls up there. I don't know what to do. It's like looking to take any of them right now. I feel like I'd rather have dental work than take any call. Now they're attacking Biden already. Now they're attacking Biden. You know why. I know what's coming. I see the whole picture with Hillary on the horizon. I know already what they're lining up. She didn't win, but there's a way in, directly. There's the way direct and indirect. That's all. So Biden's already being given a little walking message soon. Something tells me Biden's going to have a little medical problem shortly, and there's going to be a shifting of the puppets on the stage. Something tells me. And so, whoa! Wow, you went from Secretary of State to Vice President. How'd that? Well, we modified the Constitution a little bit, but we did so in the interest of America, and special times require special modifications, so don't worry about it, and take a walk and dummy up, and that's it. And she's now Vice President, that's all. And then I hope he doesn't fly in any small planes to Hyannisport over the weekend. That's all I can say. Woo. I just hope he doesn't take up flying and go to Hyannisport over the weekend. I still have a weird feeling about that. You know, that plane crash, you don't even understand the New York seat, which they just appointed to the woman with Sarah Palin from upstate New York, the Democrat, the NRA woman. Thank God it wasn't the unqualified Kennedy. Whoa. My God. Thank God Patterson had a bigger vision than they thought. You know, they're the ones who were partially blind, not him. This guy can see pretty well. Patterson picked the woman, so she's a conservative Democrat. He knows what he's doing. His advisors are smart. He did the right thing. But that seat was originally Moynihan's seat. Those of you who don't remember who he was. He was the intellectual, sort of like an intellectual of the liberals. You know, he said things with two or three syllables sometimes, and therefore that qualified him as the equivalent of Freud, Wagner, and Karl Marx put together. But because he strung together more than two-syllable words, he was the intellectual. He wrote a paper once in a while. And he was a liberal, and that seat was always known as the New York Senator's the liberal seat. Then it was supposed to be Kennedy's seat, Kennedy the male. Good-looking guy, should have been the senator. And they knew he would have been president. If he had become senator, the young Kennedy was killed in that unfortunate plane crash, he would have been president by now. No question about it. You look back on history. I'm giving you a thumbnail of what went on here. Now, some would say the plane crashed on its own accord. He flew it upside down in the dark or whatever. I'm not so sure, that's all. There were an awful lot of airplane crashes over the years that later proved out to be mysterious, like black and blue marks that appear on your arm in the middle of the night. You know what I'm saying? I'll be right back. Savage.
Come along and be my Bahari doll. Come along and be my Bahari doll. Come along and be my Bahari doll.
You know, when I hear music like this, I think of America that was such a different country. 99% a better country than what it's become today. A cesspool. A cesspool. You don't like what I said? It's too bad. It's one man's opinion. It's still legal. I think the country's become not a melting pot, but a chamber pot. With the failed immigration policies of Teddy Kennedy. That lying Chappaquiddick man. 1965, he revised the immigration laws, and he said, oh, don't worry about it. My Immigration Reform Act won't change the demographics of America. The country looks like a chamber pot. We have a drug issue out of control now. We have an immigration issue out of control, welfare out of control. Schools are melting down. People can't speak English. Press one for English. It's a chamber pot. We've gone from a melting pot to a chamber pot. That's what America, unfortunately, has become. And all this talk about a downturn in the economy and we're going to save it with $1 trillion has one of these fraudulent criminals called politicians said, but first we must deport the illegal aliens because we can no longer afford these nice people. Has one of these frauds said we're bankrupt, we don't have the money? Has one of these thieving, lying criminals said we can't afford them, they have to leave? No, not one of them. You tell me this new party is going to save things, you idiots, you. You morons, you. Norfolk, Virginia. Webster, you're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Yes, Savage. I was born in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, and I'm certainly...
Whoa. You were born in Gitmo? Are you... I don't mean to be a wise guy. Are you the product of a gay relationship between terrorists?
No. Actually, my father served 21 years in the U.S. Navy.
I'm joking. Come on, Webster. That was a bad joke, but I never heard of anyone born in Guantanamo. You're saying your father was in the military there guarding these animals.
No, actually, he retired back in 86. Gitmo was quite a different place back then. It was actually a lovely place.
I don't understand something. Here's the something that maybe you can help me. Fidel Castro, the dictator, owns Cuba. He's run it as a prison camp. And yet he let America have a military base there on Guantanamo forever? Why? How does that work?
Well, actually, there was a 99-year contract before Castro came in. I signed between the leaves.
Oh, wait a minute. Since when does a communist dictator respect contracts?
Well, actually, the thing is, Cuba wasn't exactly a communist country back in 1899.
I know that, but Castro is a gangster. Castro is a criminal. Castro is a dictator. How come he just didn't kick the U.S. out of the Guantanamo Naval Air Base?
Well, I don't know, and I guess since Kennedy threatened the naval blockade and nuclear war, I don't think Castro had too much stomach after the Bay of Pigs, so.
Well, you know, this leads me to believe that certain dictators are not only tolerated by America, but actually supported by America in order to keep various interests alive. I think Castro could have been an appendage of the U.S. government in a way. Just as I always, for a long period, came to understand that Yasser Arafat was probably kept alive both by Israel and by the United States government for their own interests.
Sure. It happened.
Right? In other words, Yasser Arafat was a certifiable gangster. He was a certifiable murderer. And yet he was never killed by the Israelis. And they had many opportunities. They cornered him in various places. They never killed him. They needed Yasser Arafat for their own reasons, both to provoke fear at home and also to keep the worst people under control, because usually these dictators didn't apply the rules of the Marquess of Queensberry. They certainly didn't apply the rules that the liberals want us to apply to the terrorists today. And that's why I say they were useful operatives of our own government. So you are for or again closing the Gitmo detention camp?
I'm against closing it because, first of all, let's look at some important facts. Fact, okay, Gitmo is located right in the middle of the Caribbean, right in the middle of basically nowhere, and it's easy to control. Gitmo is surrounded by a bunch of landmines and marines. So where can they go? The water's filled with sharks, too. So, come on, I think the biggest mistake is look at what happened.
I believe that the Gitmo prisoners should be sent to San Francisco to be overseen by Mayor Gavin Newsom and the District Attorney Kamala Harris, because since they can't control the crime wave in San Francisco, they will not be able to control the terrorists either, and then they'll have the freedom that they've always wanted. And as you well know, according to the liberal doctrines, once the terrorists experience true freedom and they can participate in a gay parade, perhaps they can eat a pizza in the Castro district, they might give up bomb making and take up something else.
Like Crochet? No.
No. Once they see the niceties of Western civilization, as exemplified by the fine restaurants of San Francisco, they'll put down their desire to blow people up, and they'll start to build things. You know, it's just that they've been oppressed by Nixon and then by Bush. That's the reason they became terrorists, as you well know. It's not because it's inherent in their creed. It's not because it's inherent in their credo. It's not because it's inherent in their psycho. It's because of Nixon and Bush that they became terrorists. You understand that. That's why they should be turned over to San Francisco.
Savage.
1, 2, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, rock. 5, 6, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, rock. 9, 10, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, rock. We're going to rock around 10 o'clock tonight. Put your glad rags on. Join me, home. We'll have some fun when the clock strikes one.
This is Dr. Dissident on the Savage Nation, where the chrome is thick and the women are straight. This is America as it should be. Not all of America has been dragged into the perverse corner. Not all of America has been dragged into the obverse corner. Not all of America has been dragged into the obtuse corner. Oh, yeah, I can see those shoes. I can see those peg pants. I can see the guitar, the hair. What happened to the country? You said something to guys like this, they blast you in the face. Now, if you say a word to a male cabin steward on United Airlines coming out of San Francisco, they take your children away and put you in prison. What happened to America? No anger permitted. Unless you're a radical feminist or a gay or an oppressed minority. Everyone else can be angry. You're not allowed to be angry? They'll find out what angry is soon when the powder keg goes off. Go ahead, keep it up. See if there's a powder keg or not. See if it's all been denuded and see if it's all been made wet. See if all the powder's been made wet in America. I doubt it. I doubt it. I tell you the truth. If you think a politician or a political party is going to save you from what was caused by the two political parties and by politicians, then you're nuts. There's no politician out there who's going to save America right now. And for you to be swooning like a teenager over Obama is the mark not of your intelligence, but of your delusion, in my opinion. And as Gerald Warner wrote, and as I posted today on michaelsavage.com, Barack Obama, this emperor has no clothes. It will all end in tears. I'm unfortunately agreeing with him. He says it's all public hysteria. It is all public hysteria. And that anyone who sits here worshiping him is in for a very, very rude awakening. He said we should be long past applauding politicians of any hue. They got us into this mess. The best of them deserve a probationary opportunity to prove themselves. The worst of the politicians should be in jail. He says it is questionable whether the present political system can survive the coming crisis. I agree. I totally agree. Both parties are bankrupt. And yet you fools go there and act as though this old group of Clintonistas is going to save America. It shows you how deluded you are. And what's the first thing he does? He's going to free the prisoners of Guantanamo, and he's going to give them constitutional protections. Now, you talk about deluded liberal insanity. It doesn't get any more deluded or insane than this. First of all, I want to remind you that these people are not American citizens, and so therefore, they are not entitled to constitutional protections. That's number one. But more than that, these people were captured during a time of war. I know it wasn't your son, but there actually are Americans who have sons and husbands and fathers and uncles and brothers, the real Americans, who are fighting over there so you can continue to cavort here as though there's no tomorrow. But the fact of the matter is, it was during wartime that these vermin were captured, and it was during wartime that they were treated as enemy combatants. And I want to remind you, since your educational level is so low, most of you liberals, that the concept of an enemy combatant was created by FDR, the liberal Democrat, in the 1940s, during a time when the German government under Adolf Hitler tried to launch sabotage in America by running spies, saboteurs in here on German submarines. And a group of them were caught, I think it was eight of them, were caught soon after landing on Long Island. And they were defined not as American citizens, not to be protected by the U.S. Constitution, not given trials in courts of law, but they were termed enemy combatants. And I believe it was called the Curran decision. I think it's Q-U-R-A-N. You can look it up on Google. I believe it was the Curran decision. I'm pretty sure I read it about four times. And the Curran decision said that they're enemy combatants, that they're not entitled to a trial in a court of law. They were given a military tribunal, and I think seven of them or six of them were shot. The Nazi spies, the saboteurs, were shot. One of them was sent to a prisoner of war camp, and one was repatriated to Germany. I believe that's more or less my recollection of that case, the disposition of that case. But the point is that they never were afforded, even by the liberal Democrat FDR during a time of war, the idea that they should have constitutional protection. It is only now because of the low education level, the high amount of drug usage, and the absurdity of liberalism itself, the mental disorder, that we could even conceive that these subhumans should be afforded the constitutional protections of the United States of America, which they are sworn to destroy, which they hate, which they're sworn to destroy. It's only the absurdity of liberalism. Do you understand why I am a dissident? Do you understand why I call myself Dr. Dissent? Do you understand this? And if a person in talk radio is not willing to be a dissenter, they should get out of the business. They should have the decency to resign. And I am a proud dissident. I am a very proud dissident. Now, there's a man in Chicago who is now posing as a dissident, even though he's part and parcel of the corrupt political system. His name is Cowboy Blagojevich. Here is a man who is so whacked out in his misconception of himself that he's actually posing as a dissident when he himself is the part of the problem. Listen to this.
Under these rules, Rule 15F and Rule 8B, under that fact pattern I just gave you, if the cowboy who's charged with stealing a horse was charged with doing that in town, but in fact on the date and time that he apparently stole the horse in town, he was on the ranch with six other cowboys, herding cattle and roping steers, and then he expects that when his day comes to go to court, he can bring those six cowboys to say it wasn't him because he wasn't in town, he was on the ranch herding cattle. Even if he could bring those cowboys in to say that, under these rules, under 8B, it wouldn't matter. The complaint that charged him with stealing the horse would convict him because you can't challenge it and you can't have a chance to be able to contest it.
From Brokeback Mountain to Blagojevich Fountain of rhetoric, I've never seen anything like this. How did this man become governor? I don't understand this. Well, I do know that the political class, I understand, in this country is protected by the media class. But to think that a man as deluded as this, I think he's deranged. I think the man is deranged. I don't understand how you people in Illinois made this guy a governor. How did you make Obama a senator? How'd you make him a president? How? From Brokeback Mountain to Blagojevich Fountain. Did he compare himself to a cowboy stealing cows? Play Bebop-a-Lupa, Bebop-a-Lula. I want to see what it sounds like.
She's the gal in the red blue jeans. She's the queen of all the team. She's the woman that I know. She's the woman that loves me so, say Bebop-a-Lula.
It is the Savage Nation where the chrome is thick and the women are straight. You ever see those little Priuses? They have no chrome, and the women are all crooked. You ever see the women who drive Priuses? They're all crooked. There's no chrome on it. That's a giveaway. Whatever happened to this country? How did this happen? By degree, the slowly boiling frog, they say. Look who we have as a president now. A huckster. An emperor without clothing. They're falling all over themselves. How are the polar bears doing, I wonder? You know, I'm really wondering if they're surviving. And they said they all should be dead by now, that the ice floes were going out to the fifth grade classroom and that we're drowning with their babies. And are they still living? Do we have any left? Plenty of them left. Did you know the Antarctic ice pack is thicker than it was in the last 100 years, but they didn't teach you that in the fifth grade? Where's Al Gore during this cold spell? He's still underground or he came out yet? Was he at the inauguration, Beowulf? Was he seen? Did he come out? I think he did. Was he wearing a white polar bear coat? White polar bear fur coat? Oh, God. It is fun. It, you know, as they say, the ancient philosophers used to say, the Greeks, it's good to be alive in interesting times. We are living in very, if it wasn't so tragic that we could lose the currency and lose the economy and lose the war on terror because of these college professors who were about to run America, I would say it's good to be alive in interesting times, but these are not just interesting times. These are dangerous times. For example, here's Obama, the genius, Obama, the benevolent, Obama, the great, talking about how Israel should open up the border with Gaza. Let's hear clip 11.
As part of a lasting ceasefire, Gaza's border crossings should be open to allow the flow of aid and commerce with an appropriate monitoring regime with the international and Palestinian Authority participating.
Let's hold on. The border should be open. And what do you suppose will flow along with the food and the milk? Would it be bombs and bullets, Mr. Obama? Oh, I know there's going to be monitors there. Maybe Barbara Mikulski herself can stand on the border with a certain outfit. Yeah, you're gonna monitor. I love the word monitor. They remind me of the monitors we had in the school I went to. Or the ushers we had in the Lois Valencia. They really were able to stop kids from throwing good and plenty at the screen because they had a flashlight and had pimples on their face. Half of them wound up tossed out of the side door. I mean, but for God's sakes, monitors. We weren't afraid of monitors in the Lois Valencia any more than the Hamas is going to be afraid of the monitors wearing skirts from Sweden. Where would you send the detainees? I would send them to San Francisco just to show you how liberalism can deal with criminals. They'll make them part of the city government. That's what they would do. Any Tucson Newsom would make the radical Islamist part of his government to show how inclusive he is and how open he is. How about Alcatraz? Al in New York, that's your idea, correct, on WOR, Al?
Yes, that's my idea. You send tenants from Gitmo right up to Alcatraz. It's an ideal spot, right in Nancy Pelosi's backyard. And
I think it's actually not a bad idea because you can't swim off the island, and I boat around it on a constant basis. The currents are too swift. I think no one's ever been able to swim. Maybe someone did it once, but it's very hard to escape by swimming off the island. Why don't we let's suggest that we put the prisoners, we use the stimulus money to refurbish Alcatraz. That should cost $700 million alone because it's in Nancy Pelosi's backyard. And as you well know, all roads lead to Rome and from Rome. So therefore, if she were to hire the contractors, I would guess renovating Alcatraz would take up 99% of the entire stimulus. Wouldn't you think so? And all right, that's it. In other words, if Nancy Pelosi, through her contacts, said, I'll tell you what, we're going to refurbish Alcatraz, and in order to do so, we have to spend whatever it takes. A light bulb would cost $4 million, probably. A light switch would cost $12 million. They probably need $800 million just to renovate Alcatraz if it was Nancy Pelosi's friends doing it. So let's say they renovate it, and then they put the Gitmo detainees there. Why, they could have all of the libs from San Francisco, the code stinkers, the mayor could go out there. They could visit with the prisoners. They could go there and read from the holy book with them. They could go out there and they could bring them vegetables, fresh vegetables from the gardens of San Francisco. They could take them on a tour of the fusion restaurants in San Francisco. They could take a radical Islamist to fusion restaurants and see how they behave. Where else would you put whoever they are? Where are they going to put them? They don't know what to do with them. This is classic liberalism. I want them to have human rights. I want them to have civil rights. I want to close Guantanamo. Where are you going to put them? We don't know, but we feel good closing Guantanamo. Why do you feel good? Because we were told to do it by the psychopathic women in Code Stink. The Code Stinkos said close it, so we're closing it. Where are you going to put them? We don't know. Does it matter? No. The main thing is that we feel good closing it. Who's going to take them? Nobody. The country they came from doesn't want them. Nobody wants them. Now, I'll tell you, I have an idea. If we were to pay to build a prison in Siberia, would Putin take them to a prison in Siberia? That would be a good solution. Let's say we spent $100 million to build a prison for them up there and take them from the heat to the cold and afford them all of the wonders of the Russian prison system, which, as you well know, is they're not as nicely treated in the Russian prison system as they are in our system here. As you well know, there are no weights, for example. No color television sets, no chinning bars, no ethnic meals, no movies, no television sets. There's just, they give you plenty of ink and needles for tattooing, but I don't know if that's permitted according to their belief system, but they could go to Siberia since they don't like the heat of Guantanamo, since that's considered torture, making them have 6 ethnic meals a day and providing them with prayer mats and prayer books, since that's considered torture by the libs. I think that we should build a prison in Siberia and send him there, and I'll be right back.
Savage.
So you met someone who set you back on your heels. Goody, goody. So you met someone, and now you know how it feels. Goody, goody. So you gave him your heart to.
It is the Savage Nation, reporting live from the land of the dimwit. Land of the Dimwit. In 49, the miners came, and 51, the whores. Did anyone ever read Mark Twain? That's what I love about San Francisco society. The higher up they are on Pacific Heights, the closer they are to Mark Twain's adage about in 49, the miners came. Anyone who can call this show and finish Mark Twain's adage about in 49, the miners came, and 51, the whores. And that's not a dirty word. It was Mark Twain, one of the great American authors, as you well know. I'm not ashamed to say it. But it's fun living in a provincial city such as this and seeing the people aping society. Of course, I don't know what society is today other than the competent, basically stable nuclear family. To me, that's high society, certainly. I don't see that on Pacific Heights. The higher up you go, the lower the social order, just as in Palm Beach. These are people who probably have pins on a map in their living room of every house on Pacific Heights in San Francisco with the net worth of the family to the best of their private detective's knowledge. And that's, of course, how they gauge each other, the same way any prostitute would a John. And that is because most of the descendants on Pacific Heights go back, actually, to the Gold Rush days when the prostitutes married the rich miners and gave birth to the ruling society of San Francisco, which gave us the kind of ruling situation that we have today. In 49, the miners came in. Does anyone know this one? Can you look it up? It's a wonderful, wonderful little ditty that's not read anywhere in San Francisco anymore. I understand the opera opened the other night. Oh, my God, they report on the gowns. There is nothing quite as humorous as seeing the San Francisco Chronicle's report on the gowns that the old hags from Pacific Heights wore to the opening of the ballet or the opera. I don't understand this. Do they not see how they look? Is there we have a winner on the line here on the Savage Nation who knows the guys? You got to put it up quick. I'm like almost at it. Yes, no, no one knows it. Say yes or no. No. All right. No one knows Mark Twain. Let's move on. I've done it already. I'm green. I'm the green radio man, like the Green Hornet. I'm the most green radio host in the world because the fact of the matter is I give you the unvarnished truth, and that's as green as it gets, believe it or not. 1-800, the miners came in 49, the whore in 51. They rolled upon the barroom floor, then came the native son. I didn't say it. It was Mark. God, that's terrible. Could you put that up again? I can't believe it. That's the actual quote from Mark Twain. Guys, put it back up. That was so good. Now, this is Mark Twain, great American author. This is dedicated to all of the lowlifes on Pacific Heights who put Obama in office by running one fundraiser after another and who, as you well know, have the most wrecked concept of society imaginable. And as I say, the higher up you go on the hill, the lower the social order. The miner came in 49, the whore in 51. They rolled upon the barroom floor, then came the native son. Now, I don't know why the San Francisco newspapers don't publish that over and over again. I think it would be quite refreshing. It would be like aqua velva after a roll in the hay. San Francisco, keep it up. That's a good one. Taylor, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Oh, I'm sorry, Michael. I thought I had it with the native son, but I thought that was the end of the quote.
No. Do you agree that's the quote? The
miner? Yeah. And the whore in 51.
How did you know that? Because you're one of the few people who know that the higher up you go on Pacific Heights in San Francisco, the lower the social species.
Actually, I'm a prospector up in the hills, so I sort of...
So you're hoping you strike a gold mine, and then in two generations, they can aspire to the low life style of life on Pacific Heights.
Oh, I hope not, but yeah, basically.
Hold on. I'm going to send you a prize. You're getting a free copy of Psychological Nudity. The miner came in 40. Do we have any appropriate Mark Twain music? Any Golden State music?
Giddy up, ding dong, giddy up.
Giddy up, ding dong. I love it. This is dedicated to all of the lowlifes on Pacific Heights. Turn it off. The miner came in 49, the whore in 51. They rolled upon the barroom floor, then came the native son. Why, yes, we had some of the finest dresses come out over the... Yes, we have some of the finest opera this side of the, yes, we went back east and we saw a fine opera there in New York and we brought her out here and she was quite a singer. We had her up to the ballroom we have up on Pacific Heights. They have never worked a day in their life, these people. Just, it's sad what their children become. The whole truth can be seen in their children. The whole truth and nothing but the truth. That's the horrible reality of it. And I don't wish it upon anyone, even Osama bin Laden.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Hey, Here's what we've been talking about in the Savage Nation. Obama gets mad at the media. Gitmo blowback and the Reich stuff. Let's begin with the Reich stuff. Why has the racist liberal media refused to report the hateful words of Obama's economic advisor, Robert Reich? Have you heard his racist diatribe against white male construction workers anywhere except in the Savage Nation? You know you haven't. You know you're living in a police state. You know I'm the only voice of dissent left in the media. You know it. White males need not apply except in the Savage Nation. Obama gets mad at the media. Oh, my. You see, Obama visited the White House press room. He tried to schmooze with the press gang. He tried to win them over with his double talk and his charm. And he actually got flustered when a reporter asked him a real question.
Mr. President, how do you reconcile Mr. Lin?
Hold on a second, guys. I came down here to visit. I didn't come down here.
Very strict lobby rules, though. Mr. Lin was a lobbyist, sir.
Right, don't worry, guys. We'll.
Okay. See,
we'll
this is what happens. I can't end up visiting you guys and just shaking hands if I'm going to get grilled every time I come down.
Isn't this an indication that Obama will start to place restrictions on the media in the months to come? Which so-called conservatives will be on his side when he does? How about all of them? The question the reporter asked was about the lobbyist, William J. Lynn, that Obama wants to make deputy defense secretary. A lobbyist as defense secretary? Was Obama just angry that his veneer was ripped off and he couldn't take it? The king has no clothes? Gitmo blowback, did you hear this, all of you moron liberals? A Saudi terrorist who was released from Guantanamo has become a top member of Al-Qaeda. Hey, ho, ho, yeah. How many leaders will be giving Al-Qaeda when a Gitmo closes, all you morons from NYU and Columbia? How many lawsuits will be filed by terrorist ex-prisoners, all you psychos from NYU and Columbia? One of Obama's executive orders has been that he will close the terrorist prison camp of Gitmo within a year. Well, what does he intend to do with these killers that have been picked up on the battlefield fighting Americans and allied forces? Well, I wish I could tell you because I haven't heard anything from Obama. Where are they going to be going? We all know how openly hostile the press has been towards Gitmo, and in fact, it's become a liberal mantra that's repeated without thinking that some torture and human rights abuses take place there. To shed some light on these myths that torture actually takes place there, I'd like to welcome Colonel Gordon Cuculio, author of Inside Gitmo. Colonel Cuculio, what is the biggest misperception about Guantanamo Bay that is being parroted by the so-called media?
Yeah, thank you, Michael. I'm appreciative to be on the show with you tonight. And, you know, you've asked the most perceptive question that I think was the genesis, really, for the book that I decided to do on Guantanamo. The list of myths is probably as long as your arm, but the one that I think was most painful is that torture and abuse not only are prevalent by our American servicemen and women in Guantanamo, but that these things are actually a matter of Army policy. And in 2005, when I had the opportunity to go to the first of my five trips to Gitmo, that really was the driving force behind that. As an old soldier, I wanted to go down there and find out, had my Army really changed that much? And if so, was it broken? Could it be fixed? When I went there, much to my surprise, pleasant surprise, I might add, the transparency of the installation, the openness of all of the personnel, military and civilian support, was just astounding. They allowed me over the course of those five visits to go anywhere I wanted on very short notice, to see things that you know needed to be seen. I ended up walking probably every square yard of the blocks. Went to watch interrogations, and even though the subjects and the interrogators didn't know I was watching, saw all of the camps and installations, all of Camp Delta, including some like Camp Echo that few people visit. Got to talk to hundreds of servicemen and women and civilian support staff, and ended up I went to the library, the hospital, the food preparation facility. I ate a detainee meal. And what I came away with was the fact that, yes, there had been, in an unfortunate period in late fall of 2002, there was one subject, detainee number 063, Muhammad al-Qahtani, who was a self-confessed 20th hijacker from 9/11, who had been mistreated and, in fact, abused. However, these procedures were, at that time, for a very short period of time, authorized by the Defense Department. They were carried out over a 30-60-day period. And once the complaints were heard and voices were people voiced opposition to that continued form of interrogation, it ceased. There was some disciplinary action taken, and it's never recurred. The FBI did a 438-page report on Guantanamo in which it cited this example, and also mentioned that out of 24,000 interrogations that had taken place between 2002-2005, there were three instances all involving the same individual of maltreatment. However, it didn't come into torture. But I've had young people tell me on return to the States that they're ashamed to tell their friends and family where they served for the last year because of the slander and libel that is inflicted on our soldiers and sailors who serve at Guantanamo. And I think that's absolutely scandalous and needs to be changed. And I hope that this book goes a long way to doing that. More germane, perhaps, to the listeners for, you know, for what we face in the future, Michael, is that we're in a position now where we've got a president who's talking about closing it within a foreseeable horizon, perhaps a year, perhaps a bit longer, with the one of the few options remaining of relocating these people to somewhere in the United States. And I think that the listeners need to realize that this isn't a geographic problem. This isn't something that's going to be solved simply by changing the address of Guantanamo. The activist anti-Guantanamo components really will be satisfied with nothing less than outright release, and nothing less than outright release for many of these hard-case jihadists. It might as well be a suicide pact for the United States, because all we're doing is asking these people to return to the battlefield and come back at us. Places that have been mentioned include Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, Charleston, South Carolina, Pendleton, California, the Supermax prison in Colorado, and others. And I think that to dwell on one of these places for a moment would be very instructive. Leavenworth, Kansas, for example, has no hospital capable of handling the detainees other than the Cushing Memorial, which is in the city of Leavenworth itself. It's not on the installation. These detainees regularly see medical personnel four times monthly, and contrast that to the average American male of the same age who will see a doctor maybe 3.7 times a year. So we're looking at, if we have a population down there of approximately 200, we're looking at maybe 25 to 30 round trips a day from the detention facility into Cushing Memorial. Adjacent to Cushing Memorial are two elementary schools. We know, Michael, we know that everywhere in the world that these jihadists are active, that they're very comfortable with taking hostages and carrying out summary executions of innocents in places like Beslan, Russia, in Iraq and Afghanistan, throughout the Middle East. And there is every reason to believe that if we relocate these people to the continental United States, that all this will do is paint a bullseye on the community that ends up being unfortunate enough to have this installation, these detainees located in their community. And I don't, you know, I'm not worried so much about confining the detainees. We can do that well. What I'm worried about is the impact that this is going to have on the children and the civilians in the surrounding community. And I think finally, the what I'd like to say about Guantanamo is that it's important for the listeners to realize that the overwhelming majority of the United States population does not want these people on our soil. Every poll that we've registered, and we've got these polls on the companion website for the book at www.insidegitmo.com for everyone to go to. Every one of these polls is strongly in favor of keeping Guantanamo open, or at least keeping them out of the United States and out of our communities. And I think this is a critical fact that we all need to know. The Obama team seems at this point to be bent on closing Guantanamo, but I think it's going to find some extraordinarily difficult and unexpected challenges here. And I think it's critical that the American people get informed about Guantanamo, that they learn about it, and that they express their opinion to their elected officials, because we've got situations now where we've got Representative Jack Murtha of Pennsylvania actually offering up his community to these jihadists. And I think it would be really wise for the people in that community and others who are jeopardized, as well as the general American public, to get smart about this topic, to express their opinion about it, and let it be known that we do not want these people located in our community. So with that, Michael, I turn it over to you.
Thank you, Colonel Cuculio, for your insight. This is Dr. Dissident Michael Savage back in a moment.
Savage.
I've warned you for a long time about the racist possibilities of the Obama administration, yet liberals across America, even many so-called conservatives, are saying, we have to give Obama a chance. He hasn't even done anything yet. Well, he has done something. In his first 3 days, he's issued a laundry list of executive orders, something virtually unprecedented in presidential history. We find out that Obama's economic advisor, the Marxist millionaire liberal Lilliputian Robert Reich, said before a congressional committee that the money for Barack Obama's stimulus shouldn't just go to white male construction workers. This is a statement of blatant racism from one of Obama's top advisors. And this one has a history. You see, Robert Reich, the racist red diaper doper baby, was Clinton's Secretary of Labor from 93 to 97. He has a Harridan wife who earned her degree from Harvard Law School and then stabbed them in the back by suing them for gender discrimination in 1993. You see, Robert Reich is a professor at UC Berkeley. He tried to become governor of Massachusetts in 02, running on a pro-same-sex marriage platform. And his philosophy, outside of his blatant racism, well, he was quoted by the New York Times as saying, quote, I don't believe in the redistribution of wealth for the sake of redistributing wealth, but I am concerned about how we can afford to pay for what we as a nation need to do. Reich is a stone-hearted Marxist socialist, and now he's speaking to Congress trying to make sure white males don't get too large of a slice of the pie. What the midget Reich proposes is officially government-endorsed racism, a refusal to hire people on the basis of their skin color. Of course, he said later that he doesn't have anything against white construction workers, but by then he had already let the cat out of the bag.
I have nothing against white male construction workers. I'm just saying that there are a lot of other people who have needs as well. And therefore, in my remarks, I have suggested to you, and I'm certainly happy to talk about it more, ways in which the money can be, criteria can be set so that the money does go to others, the long-term unemployed, minorities, women, people who are not necessarily construction workers or high-skilled professionals.
Let no mistake be made. White liberal racists are a part of this administration. And unless they are called out and stopped, they will take us backward into the era of Jim Crow, only this time the poor white male will have a ring in his nose. It's Rock and Roll Friday. Play some music.
Well, she's the gal in the red blue jeans. She's the queen of all the teams. She's the woman that I know. She's the woman that loves me so. Say, Bebopalula, she's my baby. Bebopalula, I don't make my baby. Bebopalula, she's my baby. I'm a baby, I'm a baby.
Let's rock! President Obama's starting to get a little snappy. He got mad at the press corps last night when he paid them a little schmoozing visit, and one of them had the temerity to start asking questions, real questions. Now, clearly, this is something he's not going to want. No real questions, you know.
Mr. President, how do you reconcile Mr. Lin?
Hold on a second, guys. I came down here to visit. I didn't come down here.
Very strict lobby rules, though. Mr. Lin was a lobbyist, sir.
All right, Don't worry, guys.
I can't end up visiting you guys and just shaking hands if I'm going to get grilled every time I come down.
No, general question, sir.
I guess John didn't like my answer, Mr. President.
Just as white males need not apply, real questions need not apply. Clearly, he's used to getting total carte blanche from the media in Chicago. And when the slightest hint of a reporter doing their job comes up, he tends to go cold on the reporter. This is not the first time that this has happened. When he was making an announcement about his transition to the presidency, one reporter tried to ask a follow-up question, and Obama immediately shut him down, chastising him for trying to get to the truth.
Over the weekend, the Tribune reported that Rahm Emanuel, your incoming chief of staff, had presented a list of potential names that...
John, let me just cut you off, because I don't want you to waste your question. As I indicated yesterday, we've done a full review of this, because, for example, the story that you just talked about in your own paper, I haven't confirmed that it was accurate, and I don't want to get into the details at this point. So do you have another question?
Conflict between what you said, your hands-off approach, and the possibility that AIDS could present some names.
John.
Clearly, Barack Obama is not interested in a free press. He's interested in a lackey press. He's interested in a fawning media that refuses to do its job. He wants them to continue to portray him as the new Messiah. And he's going to find out that even in the most fawning liberal media, reporters will eventually begin to ask serious questions. And when that happens, he will not react very well. No doubt they'll be fired. It appears that he would like a Soviet-style lockstep media, in the same way he would like a Soviet-style lockstep socialist Congress, because the media is the message. His relationship with the press reveals his vision for the nation. When asked about his Pentagon nominee, William J. Lynn III, a hack lobbyist, Obama put his hands on the reporter's shoulder, stared him in the eye, and responded with obvious irritation in his voice. And it seems as if Obama, the merciful, is putting his hands on our shoulder and staring us in the eye and saying, you are no longer living in a democracy. The state will control the information you receive. The state will control your very life. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
It seems that in the era of Obama the Merciful, that anger has been outlawed as a form of expression. I don't know, maybe it has something to do with his own demeanor. You see, the liberal media has always described as being cool and calm. Maybe he's trying to enforce this on the rest of the country. And maybe that's why he becomes so offended when a reporter gets angry enough to ask a real question. Maybe that's also why a woman named Tamara Jo Freeman was thrown into jail, had her children taken away from her, simply because she displayed anger on an airplane when she actually disciplined her children and smacked them in the behind when they were acting up. She refused to act like a sheeple in front of a male flight attendant. You know, one of those wonderful kind male flight attendants that San Francisco produces like mushrooms in the rain. So this woman offended the flight attendant by spanking her children, and she spent 3 months in jail. She was convicted of a felony. She violated the Patriot Act, had her children put into foster care. See, the government took her children away for displaying anger. We know that for decades, the insane liberal adherents of Dr. Spock had said that spanking your children is a crime. And the psychiatric pharmaceutical establishment, who has been trying to spank our children with drugs, has tried to outlaw any aggressive behavior through drugs, not through discipline. Anything resembling traditional masculine behavior has been, in essence, outlawed. And so we have an entire generation of metrosexuals who refuse to fight under any circumstances. Mommy told me not to hit back, even if their lives are threatened. It's a generational thing. And it's a generation ripe for a leader such as Barack Obama, who seems to be so cool and calculating. Of course, that's meant to discourage dissent and outrage. But an era where liberals now control the Congress, a socialist controls the presidency, and rat Marxists like Robert Reich want to crush white male construction workers and redistribute the wealth of our nation, why then outrage is all we have left. Anger is our last best defense. Rage is the best weapon we have at our disposal, and we must never, ever, ever give it up. Whether it's on the airwaves, in a checkout line, or in the halls of Congress, anger must never be abandoned. Righteous indignation built this country, and it will help us survive the era of Obama the Merciful. We've been talking about how liberal college professors are now ruining the country. You know, at one time, colleges were the pinnacle of higher education. People sent their kids to college to become not only better educated, but hopefully better citizens as well. Now, if you look at what the colleges and universities pass off for degrees and curriculum, it makes you wonder how the higher education system became so tainted by the so-called liberal arts. Our next guest is Roger Kimball, whose book, Tenured Radicals, is in its third edition and exposes what's going on in our college system and who is behind it. Roger Kimball, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Great to be with you.
What was your main idea behind this book?
Well, Tenured Radicals was first published way back in 1990, and the aim was to bring to the attention of the public what had gone wrong in the teaching of the humanities and liberal arts in our colleges and universities. After all, parents were spending all of this money to get their children educated, and they found that actually what was going on was they were more like factories for a certain kind of political indoctrination. Time was that you would go to a college or university in order to become educated and become a better citizen. But increasingly, since the 1960s, colleges have become largely factories for the indoctrination of a certain left-wing political ideology. And it was my, my perception that many people didn't really understand this. They thought that colleges and universities were still the same good old institutions they've always been. And of course, there are a few freaks here and there, but basically, we were over the 1960s and things were back to normal. But that's not what happened at all. In the 60s and the 70s, the radicals were on the outside. They were manning the barricades. But what happened is they didn't go away. They got tenure and they became professors and deans and provosts and college presidents. And the left-wing activist anti-American ideology that had been on the outside in the 1960s was now working its way through the institutions inside the universities and helping to raise the consciousness of a whole generation of students and future teachers. And it was my idea that many people didn't quite understand this, and Tenured Radicals was an effort to bring this to the public's attention. And I have watched what's happened over the last decade and a half, and much to my surprise, there really hasn't been that much change among the professoriate, among the teachers, partly because of the institution of tenure, which is a kind of self-perpetuating virus. They appoint each other, they promote each other, they tenure each other, and so what happens is you get a very left-wing ideology that just kind of keeps getting passed down. Now, the student body has changed quite a bit, I think, over the last decade and a half, but the teachers really haven't, and so I decided it was time to update the book with a long new introduction, and I updated various other things in it to try to make it a pertinent document for what's going on today.
How did it get to this point?
The brief answer to that question, it's not a complete answer, but I think it's an accurate answer, is the 1960s, that assault on the fabric of American society, on traditional ways of behaving, that assault on traditional ways of understanding art and culture and the purpose of a university and a college education. All of those radical ideas that were formulated in the late 1960s and became such a prominent part of American society in the 1970s and 80s crystallized, really, I think, in that intellectual milieu of the universities. It's no accident, as the Marxists used to say, that characters like Bill Ayers, who's been getting so much ink recently, no accident that he had turned to the university to complete his radical designs that he had, once upon a time tried to put forward by bombing things. Now, instead of bombing things, he's engaged in a radical educational activity. I mean, to describe William Ayers as an educational reformer, as the New York Times did, is kind of like calling Joe Stalin an agricultural reformer. I mean, Ayers is just as radical today as he was when he was bombing the Capitol and other places around the country. It's just that now he has taken his incendiary devices into the university and is as it were detonating mines rather than bombs.
What are these schools passing off as education?
Well, the colleges and universities today, you can't step foot in an institution of higher education today without finding somewhere a big plaque proclaiming their commitment to diversity.
But you scratch that and you find out that what they mean by diversity is strict intellectual conformity on any contentious subject. And that, that the party line is always the so-called progressive left-wing line. Universities, especially in the liberal arts, have become hostage almost entirely to the imperatives of political correctness and multiculturalism. To the extent that the classics are still being taught, they're often being taught as a kind of menu of oppression studies. You read Shakespeare not in order to understand Shakespeare and what he had to say, but rather to learn about, you know, the oppression of natives in the Tempest, let's say, or the oppression of women in King Lear or something. So it's what you find is rather than being institutions devoted to the preservation and the transmission of knowledge, they're used as institutions to further a kind of cultural revolution.
Well, what's the relationship between the media, Hollywood, and the universities?
Well, I think that the media, certainly, and to a somewhat lesser extent, Hollywood, especially the Hollywood writers, are products of the university. So it's not surprising that they espouse the same left-wing, anti-American, progressive ideology. The media, at least the so-called mainstream media, represented by the New York Times and the network channels and so on, CNN, to an extraordinary extent, simply reflect the radical ethos of the university.
Is the system changing at all? Is there something we can do?
There are many, many initiatives. You know, ever since Alan Bloom wrote his book, The Closing of the American Mind, back in 1987, people have been very aware that something has gone very wrong in the universities. And it was my purpose in writing Tenured Radicals to give, you know, chapter and verse citations of how this poison had entered the bloodstream of the teaching of the liberal arts. That's why it's a very polemical book. It, it tackles, you know, particular professors, particular departments, particular disciplines, and tries to show how they have really reneged on their contract with the future to educate in a dispassionate way the next generation of students. As for bright lights, there are bright spots here and there. I think, for example, of the Madison program at Princeton University. There are initiatives at the University of Texas at Brown, but they're tiny. You know, they represent a small percentage of a tiny part of 1% of what's actually going on in most colleges and universities. So that they're laudable, but I don't know that they're making a huge difference. And part of the problem is that universities over the last couple of decades have become so incredibly rich. You know, there are small colleges, for example, like Hamilton College, that was the site of the Ward Churchill episode a year or so ago. They were going to invite Ward Churchill to come and participate in the college life there. And he, you know, here's someone who referred to the people who worked in the World Trade Center as little Eichmanns. He compared the people in the World Trade Center to Nazis, in other words. And there's a huge outcry. Finally, he didn't go to Hamilton, but when you look at Hamilton College, you find that it's an institution with an endowment approaching $1 billion, or at least it was until last month anyway. And all that money does is it effectively insulates colleges and universities from public accountability. And I think it's going to be very difficult to change the academic culture until we find some way of making them accountable to the public. As it is now, they really are sort of free agents that are sort of go their own way and are far from furthering the American dream. They are all about questioning and sort of tearing down the idea of America.
Roger Kimball, thanks for being on the Savage Nation. I'll be right back. Savage. The Obama already showing signs of trying to spend his way out of this economic crisis the way George Bush did. It brings up mental images of FDR and his failed attempt to spend us out of the depression we faced then. After listening to representatives in Washington talk about how to get out from under the crisis we are in, William Beach with the Heritage Foundation joins us with a report about the mindset in Washington and how it looks more like the 1930s than the year 2009.
Thanks, Michael. You know, here in Washington, we're about to vote on massive, enormous outlays to stimulate the U.S. economy that may be in the worst economic shape since the 1930s. And as I walk around town, I talk to members and I talk to the press, I've noticed one thing that I think is worth reporting. There are two mental models in the minds of legislators, members of Congress, senators, members of the House, and one of them I think is right and one of them I think is wrong. But unfortunately, the wrong one is sitting out there as the big one. These two mental models are the model of 1933, which is the government's going to lead the way through massive spending on infrastructure and other kinds of public works, lead the way to a better economy. And the model of 1981, which is that the federal government's going to reduce taxes on investment and work and get out of the way and let the people lead the way out of our economic mess. As I talk to members about this, I urge them to adopt the model of 81 and not of 33 for very good reasons. Two, I think, stand out. First, in the model of 1933, as historians and economists look back at it and evaluate it, did not actually deliver on its promise. The unemployment rates at the beginning of the 1930s were as high at the end of the 1930s as they were at the beginning. If you measure by gross domestic product, the economy was a little better at the end of the 1930s, but that's primarily because the population was larger. We just didn't move off the dime. That's the model of 1933, and I tell you, this stimulus legislation for next week is just filled with 1933 projects, thinking, and expectations. On the other hand, there's this other model, the model of 1981 and the Economic Recovery Act 1981, what made Ronald Reagan famous. I remember at that time Tip O'Neill said, I think it was on a radio program, if President Reagan is able to lift this economy through his tax cuts out of this recession, the Republicans will govern for the next 12 years. Basically, that was right. Well, what did Reagan do? He cut marginal tax rates from very high levels, actually, to reasonable levels, still high by today's standard, but reasonable levels. And entrepreneurs, business owners began to innovate. They began to do things that were less costly, riskier things at less cost, and we built our way out. We expect the total debt of the United States by the end of 2010 to be above $14 trillion, and we expect the gross domestic product to be slightly below $14 trillion. These are historical benchmark places. So when we think back now and debate how best to get the economy moving again, there are a lot of things that need to be in the minds of those people who will cast those votes next week and the week following. The right mental model, we say 1981, not 1933. Look at what works. Pass legislation, pass tax bills, and if you've got to do spending bills, do the things that have been proved to work. Because if you spend $850 billion on things that don't work, the consequence of that will be enormous amounts of debt that you're going to have to pay off in the future at the very time you're going to be spending even more money to bail us out of Social Security and Medicare. What a tremendous burden to place on our children. And the final thing I say to them, you get one bite of the apple if your bite is as big as $850 billion. You better put stuff into that bill that actually works. Back to you, Michael.
Thanks for your thoughts, Bill. Well, here's what's on michaelsavage.com, your one-stop shop for information. Raise your voice, go to jail, lose your kids. That's right. A woman spanked her children on an airplane because they're misbehaving. A male steward from, I guess, San Francisco didn't like it, and he reported her for violating the Patriot Act. She was arrested for terrorism. Her children were put in foster care. I swear to you it's happened. We're living in a police state. We are living in a police state. Underneath that on my website is the little-known congresswoman being picked to replace Hillary. Frankly, I think it's a pretty good choice because although she's a Democrat, she's a conservative Democrat. She's NRA-backed. She's from upstate. She knows the real land. Congratulations to Congresswoman Kirsten Gillibrand to succeed Hillary Clinton, and congratulations for Governor Patterson for doing the right thing. Two critics of Vladimir Putin take bullets to the head. Ah, what the heck. If you want to make an omelet, you got to break a few eggs. And in this case, the eggs are inside the heads of two eggheads. What the heck? Another Russian fighting for human rights and the rule of law has been murdered in Vladimir Putin's Moscow. Hey, welcome to the New World Order. 14 killed in Pakistan from a U.S. missile. Now, this is under Obama's regime. So already we already see that Obama has not stopped the war machine. Thank God. Maybe it's all rhetoric and we shouldn't be so worried. Wacko Blagojevich, that's Illinois' embattled but defiant governor, said that the emotional strain on him and his family is comparable to Japan's attack on Pearl Harbor. I guess we haven't heard the latest poem from him. Also on the website, Obama has shown his, well, he's thin-skinned, I guess. He flashed irritation the minute someone asked him a real question down in the press room. Also on MichaelSavage.com, please go down to the bottom right. You'll not believe this story. My headline is kind of clear. It says, SF scum defend Asian gangbangers who killed Russian boy, because those are the correct words for the SF scum in the defense attorney's office. Wait until you read this story. He stabs a Russian kid to death over a parking spot, and the scum in the San Francisco District Attorney's Office defend the killer as though he's the victim. Only in San Francisco. With God's will and your listenership, I shall return.
Savage.